It's time for Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And here is your host, Inside Towers business editor, John Celentano.
Hello, everyone. Glad you can join us. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence, a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. It looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. An annual subscription also includes an exclusive briefing and online support. The Q3 2021 issue will be available in early December. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. Now for our topic today. All mobile network operators are in the midst of rapid expansion and upgrade of their networks to 5G for coverage over wide areas and in dense metro applications to meet the increasing user demand for mobile data. As such, network reliability and resilience have become paramount, as we saw during the pandemic and with impacts from natural disasters. Quite simply, if a cell site goes off the air, either due to equipment failure or loss of power, calls cannot get through. In emergency situations, this means lives could be endangered. Keeping tabs on the health and status of thousands of cell sites is a challenge for any network operator. Tried and true methods of basic alarm monitoring are no longer sufficient. Today's telecom systems are complex and require some level of automation and remote control to keep them on the air. With me here today to talk about telecom site automation is John Bars, Director of Sales and Marketing at Acentria. John, welcome to Tower Talks.
Thank you, John.
Give us a high-level view on what Acentria offers by way of products and services.
Yes, we consider ourselves today to be basically what we refer to as a telecom site automation company. And this was maybe most people would know or think of us, Acentria and my company, as having evolved from basically an RTU type company, so remote terminal units. We're a 30-year-old company, so 20 years ago, that's how people would refer to us. And then more recently, they've been referring to us as RMS or RSM, remote monitoring systems or remote site management devices. And now I think it's evolved to a point where we're referring to ourselves as basically a telecom site automation company.
Does that involve a lot of what we call these days Internet of Things and cloud storage and data collection, that sort of application?
Yeah, it's become very much more. I think people would now think of us as basically a very telecom site, like a cell tower site IoT device. So that traditional use of our equipment was for alarming. So it's very limited data, very simple, something like you have a power problem at this cell site. Right. And it would not give any indication as to what it was that was actually, what was the matter. Whereas now we've moved on to maybe we would notify somebody in a similar fashion to that there's a problem, a power problem at this site. But we would now deliver all the telemetry data that would go along with that. So if you wanted to see 50 different power variables, it would give you the ability to see some of these things for troubleshooting purposes. But it's now also, because we have all of that telemetry data, then it's also now moving on to beyond just the reliability of the network. How do we troubleshoot problems? It's gone on to now efficiency at the remote sites. Where maybe you'd be looking at, well, why is this particular site performing somewhat different than another site? So this is basically useful. You know, it's not the exact same application for everybody, but this is basically useful for mobile network operators, tower leasing companies, utilities, rail, oil and gas, public safety entities. Anybody that operates a telecom network would probably find some sort of value in the telecom site automation solutions now.
So if we understand it, John, it's not just collecting data and analyzing that data and making decisions. Do you have the ability for two-way communications between whoever's in the operations center and looking at these sites?
Yeah, we do. I mean, even today, it's still a big part of what we do is what we would refer to as legacy alarms. So this is that older style of contact closure alarms, for example, mm-hmm. some sort of mechanical alarm just says that there's a problem out there. But we're doing a lot more now with power, security, and environmental issues. So an example of power would be like generator management, for example. Mm-hmm. So our device would be collecting up data from a generator and delivering it to a central place for alarming purposes or other purposes. But people are also now using these devices to control the generators. So if you wanted to do, for example, if your generators, if you had a noise suppression ordinance in California, for example, and you couldn't run generators at a certain time, like while schools are in session or at times of night, our devices are now taking over the control of that generator exercising. So you could suppress generator running, or if a hurricane was going to make landfall and you wanted to test all of your generators, you can run all the generators. So there's power, security, and environment. And then also we do direct DC reboot as well. So we can control devices that are at these telecom sites, rebooting microwave, rebooting any device that someone might decide is in a problem state.
You know, one of the big problems, especially during some hurricanes of the recent past, is that if the tower's not damaged, the site is still on the air, but they've only been on the air for as long as either fuel is in the generator or the batteries. And, you know, battery backup has been a big issue in terms of, do we have enough? You know, is it sized to keep those sites on the air? What are you doing on that aspect of monitoring the batteries?
Yeah, well, we really had sort of a major, I guess, sort of leap we felt, I guess, in the evolution of what these devices are for. After Hurricane Sandy, it was such a, you know, particularly devastating event. Right. And people were trying to operate their networks for weeks with thousands of sites effectively running on backup power. And it kind of exposed a lot of weaknesses on, you know, what sort of data people had and what sort of control they had over these sites. You basically had, you know, you're dealing with only alarms, like we're running low on fuel, you would get an alarm, but you don't really know what amount of fuel you have at any of these sites. And you're trying to efficiently schedule fuel deliveries, for example. But there's, you know, there's really many different examples of what these devices are used for. I mean, there's the disaster recovery elements. And then there's also the kind of upcoming efficiency elements as well. And I guess one other thing that sort of changed over time now, the, you know, when we were a simple unit for contact closure alarms, we could send a unit to someone and everybody knew what it was for. Mm-hmm. It was like you'd give them, they would wire up the contacts to it. I mean, there really wasn't much else to it. But these devices now, this is a hardware device at, you know, the beginning of these applications is basically a hardware device and a card slots in these devices. We now have about 40 different interface cards that slot into these devices to give you different types of interfaces to the things you would find at a network, in a network site. And that's one of the big problems that we're sort of overcoming is that, for many of these people's networks, if you're trying to interface, you know, they tell you to go interface to the generator at the site. Well, you have five different makes of generators in a big network, and you have many different ages. And so this has become a lot more sort of complex, and there's a lot more of a people sort of element to it as well. I think the engineering, the integration engineering to overcome the challenge of all these, the network disparity.
So you made a good point about the flexibility of these units and the ability to adapt to a given site situation. But are there types of systems or certain applications that really lend themselves to site automation more than others? What are you seeing in that regard?
I would say that basically, the biggest ones are power, security, and environment. But the one that everyone contacts us for in the beginning is power. And this is just, I think, because really there's hardly anything at a site that's really more devastating than a power loss or power outage. So from a pure reliability standpoint, power is one of the biggest ones. But the more people use these systems and the more access they get to the power data, then I think it also starts to lead to these efficiency questions of are these sites all using power in the best possible way? But pretty much everybody that might use these types of solutions kinds of values it a little bit differently. I mean, if you have like a public safety entity might be interested in reliability above everything else, and efficiency is not really such a big issue for them. Yeah. But then for telecom operators, you know, they may have an efficiency, a desire for efficiency that causes them to use even the same application in kind of a different way. So like switching between power sources or that sort of thing for that might be in order to sustain or keep a site alive for a public safety entity. But for a mobile network operator, that might be, well, if we could switch just for a little bit to an alternate power source, then maybe we could save some energy. So power by far is the most important one.
Gotcha. Okay. So the data is collected, it's delivered to whoever's managing the network. Is that data shared? So for instance, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of the operators have, they subcontract field work either to systems integrators or large maintenance organizations. Do they get to share in that data in any way, or is the system flexible enough that it allows for that kind of interaction?
Yeah, well, that's definitely, you know, basically reliability data and efficiency data, just as an example, frequently need to go to two different places, really. So reliability data is usually going to go to a network operations center, to some sort of network management software. Mm-hmm. So wherever that network operations center is located, but even then, sometimes regionally, you want to have cell techs be able to see something separate of the larger network operation group. And then, of course, efficiency data is really almost something entirely different. If you're in charge of making sure that the network is up and running, it is not your responsibility typically to make sure that, you know, can we shave off 1% of our energy usage or something.
Right.
So the solutions sort of begin with these hardware devices that are out in the field, but we have modern like REST API methods of delivering data, or SNMP, which might very well go to two different places or possibly multiple different locations for different purposes.
Do you find that some of your customers, big operator customers, are using that data? I know a lot of them are adopting sustainability goals and energy efficiency goals. And this would be, seem to me, would be a good way to track how they're doing. Are you starting to see that being used that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing that's available right this minute, you know, with really no technological leap whatsoever, is that simply the analytics by themselves goes a long ways to understanding for sustainability purposes. I mean, if you're, you know, if you implement a change and you want to see whether the change has actually done something or not, in the old days, people had their benchmarks, but they didn't really know if sites were actually adhering to those benchmarks. Whereas now you can get site-specific telemetry data to understand whether you're adhering to the benchmarks. And so in the beginning, or right now, it's really geared towards, you know, I think there's a big push for the analytics piece of things. And then in the future, I think there's, you know, there's more interest in possibly, you know, really pure automation of, since you have sort of bi-directional control of the sites, you could actually start to alter things at sites using these devices, like HVAC set points or those types of things. And I mean, we've done some experimentation on that front, and it's interesting. We haven't done anything on a wide scale deployment yet, but definitely the analytics piece is here. I mean, that's being done today and with really good results.
Just out of curiosity, how big an application are you serving? Like, do you have a customer with hundreds or thousands of sites? Without naming names, could give us an idea of how this can scale.
Yeah, well, I think that it's definitely become you know, we see the largest networks as being probably some of the users that can get the best benefit from this. And so we have three customers that are over 10,000 remote sites, and we have numerous, and that really that's only one type of customer. It's the mobile network operators or the tower cos.
Right.
They're really almost the only ones that have that many sites. We have some utilities and some others that have hundreds of sites.
Right.
I mean, I feel like we're quite a mature company, or quite old in some ways. And so we're fully into the different customer types to kind of like the fullest extent you could be. It's definitely not a theoretical or, you know, it's not 20 years of vaporware or something.
Sure. You mentioned sort of companies other than wireless organizations, either the operators or the tower company. We want to make clear that your applications are not limited to just the wireless side of the house. You're looking at the wireline side as well. And you mentioned utilities.
Yeah, we do some with, you know, we really look at it as being, it's basically telecom operators with remote locations. You know, sometimes people have tried to press our devices into use in other places, and usually that's not quite as good of a fit. Mm-hmm. But it's, but you know, even if public safety and mobile network operators or tower cos or what have you don't necessarily look at each other as being that similar to one another, rail or utilities, they look the same to us. You know, there's usually somebody in those companies that's interested in. You know, they have the same problem as here comes a hurricane.
That's
you
right.
know, how am I going to manage my oil pipeline if my telecom sites are down? And so we're able to help those people with these same solutions.
Excellent. Well, this is very interesting, John. I appreciate the conversation. Just to wrap up, I mean, would you have any other thoughts or closing remarks you'd like to share with us?
You know, I think I would say that maybe when I was saying that different telecom operators have different, you know, they all look sort of the same to us, but they might derive somewhat different benefits from us. You know, again, public safety, they're purely usually only interested in the reliability side of things, whereas a mobile network operator might want to do something that was geared towards reliability, of course, but also efficiency. Is that we really feel like trials are kind of like the most important thing. We're very happy to come out, and we oftentimes don't know ourselves exactly what we could do for someone. What problem would we solve? I mean, within a mobile network operator, it could be that some sites have high theft problems. And so the problem, we might be the camera solution for certain sites, and we might be the generator solution in places with greater numbers of natural disasters. And I think that it's really challenging for us to explain or point out the ROI in some cases for these solutions. So we highly recommend coming out and doing a trial, and that's very much a part of our normal process. And so, I mean, we really invite anybody who had an interest in this to contact us and request or see if possibly a trial could be done. Mm-hmm. And that's really the best way. We go out to a site and we would integrate to everything that we could and sort of show what it is that could be done, and then scale it down to kind of match the ROI that's necessary. Maybe somebody doesn't need every possible thing at every site, but we should show every possible thing and then work out a commercial solution at the end. So we'd really welcome that.
That's excellent. Well, so how can interested parties find out more about Essentria's products and services? Where could they go?
I mean, definitely the easiest place is www.essentria.com, and that's Essentria.com. My name again is John Bars. I'm happy to speak with anyone, but probably going through the website is easiest to make sure that you know, there's contact information forms there, and there's also a lot more information. I would recommend looking at the resources section in there, where we have white papers and so forth.
Great.
So,
I've had a look at some of them. They're pretty interesting, pretty informative.
Yeah, we're really kind of excited to talk about some of these things. We feel like we've been I don't want to say toiling in obscurity, but there are certain mobile network operators in particular that have done a lot with our stuff, and we'd love to let everybody know what we've done. So
great. Well, thank you, John, for an informative conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much, John. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks to everyone for listening in. This concludes this Tower Talks episode. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.